You are listening to National Security Law Today.
Welcome to National Security Law Today, the podcast of the ABA's Standing Committee on Law and National Security. I'm Elisa Poteet, and we appreciate you listening tonight. We have some very quick reminders for you, one of which you want to listen to carefully. And that is, you only got a couple of days to register for the in-person annual review of the Field of National Security Law CLE conference. It's scheduled for November 14th and 15th in Washington, D.C. And if you go to the link that we will add to the notes of this cast, you'll be able to see the list of speakers and panel topics. But in the meantime, think seriously about registering right away because it's coming up super fast. All right, we're going to turn to some national security news you might have missed while you were drowning in election coverage. Other superpowers held a meeting known as the BRICS Summit in Kazan last week. Prime Minister of India Modi was there, along with Vladimir Putin of Russia and President Xi Jinping of China. And they're deciding the new world order after the United States. So this included finding a different global money transfer system that would operate in parallel to, or rather against, the SWIFT system that now dominates the correspondent bank to correspondent bank transfer world. Now, you might remember that Russian banks were kept out of SWIFT and many other correspondent banking relationships because of sanctions. Our control over things like SWIFT and our use of them is what really allows any efficacy from sanctions. Because the U.S. can basically prevent the transfer of money to sanctioned entities or can sanction banks or penalize banks that do so. So in case you didn't know, China has already created its own system, a CIPS, KIPS, however they pronounce it, which is fully controlled by the Chinese Communist Party and is not at all dependent on the United States. So if this trend continues, it could be a sea change for sanctions in the United States. Now, the chief of the United States Space Force, Chance Saltzman, told Europeans last week that China's development of space weapons is occurring at, quote, an alarming pace, and that other nations need to respond through increasing their own development of space weapons in order to create any deterrence at all. And in case you didn't know, while we were all squabbling over politics, China and Russia were testing satellites with grappling hooks that can pull other satellites out of orbit, as well as kinetic kill vehicles that can target satellites and long-range ballistic missiles in space. Military leaders told the House Armed Services Committee that Russia was developing indiscriminate nuclear weapons that can be sent into space. Now, Saltzman has cautioned that leaders in the Western world are heavily reliant on private companies. And in his view, this raises concerns about how billionaires can increase their power in the space sector and hold countries financial hostage to their whims. Something to think about. Now, China also issues sanctions, and it's now sanctioning U.S. drone companies, including Skydio, the U.S.'s largest drone maker and a supplier of drones to Ukraine. Beijing is also blocking battery supplies, which will damage U.S. drone makers' bottom line and could halt production. In other news, initial reports show that Iran's strategic air defenses were actually badly damaged when Israel conducted airstrikes in Iran last month. On November 26, Israel struck facilities that were producing solid-fueled missiles at the Parchin military site, which is near Tehran. They also struck the Shahrud Ballistic Missile and Space Center, which is operated by the IRGC, Iran's Revolutionary Guards Corps. And they also hit, within Iran, Russian-made S-300 missile defense systems. And speaking of Russia, the North Korean troops are in Russia and may be deployed to Ukraine. Some 3,000 North Korean troops have arrived at the port of Vladivostok, something like that. North Korea has already provided Russia with ballistic missiles, and experts have speculated that Russia is growing quite dependent on North Korea in a way, and they're having to spend out of their budget very heavily in ways that could impact the Russian economy. In other words, they're paying for North Korea's help. South Korea has warned that its intelligence shows that North Korea will send at least 10,000 troops into Russia by December. And in case you have not heard, AT&T and Verizon were among the broadband providers hacked by China's spy agency, where they apparently were present for more than a month. And experts believe that this means that China had access to the network infrastructure of the very systems used to collect wiretaps in criminal cases and FISA collection, or Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act collection, in national security cases. Now, that's not the only hack that has happened. This week, there's been a really shocking bit of news about how 100 million Americans had their medical records exposed in a massive data breach. 100 million records, that is, I should say. You may want to take a look at this. I believe this company was called United Healthcare. I assume that they are a company that sifts through a lot of medical records that are held by various medical institutions and providers. But if you read TechCrunch, it looks like the breach may have taken place back in February of 2024 when the, I guess it's Alpha 5 Black Hat ransomware group. I'm trying to figure out what their abbreviation is intended to sound like because it's all like early internet handles. But they attacked United Health and Change Healthcare Systems, which is a widely used payment processing platform. Everybody apparently in the healthcare industry uses it. They deployed ransomware to, you know, seize the system and disrupt operations. But what makes this a little bit different is apparently there was some negotiation with the ransomware group. It's been the case in the past that upon payment of money that they would then release the data. And that apparently is not exactly what happened here. It looks like they took the money and kept the data. So I think this is actually probably a bigger event than is clear right away. Even though the records sound like a lot, I suspect it means a little bit more than we will know for some time. Let me add to that, that we've talked a lot about data and what a national security concern it is. One of the DNA testing companies that is used by individuals just interested in learning their sort of heritage, their ethnic heritage, that group is going under, and there is no indication of what is going to happen to that DNA database that they control. So this is going to be something to watch in the coming weeks. And I suspect that this could potentially affect Congress in the sense that it may encourage them to go ahead and enact some laws to protect data, which, again, still there is no wide privacy, data privacy law at all. Congress just has not taken that up. They've had hearings, they've studied it, and ultimately there really has been almost nothing. You may be wondering, as we're heading into elections, what are news groups doing to make sure that they are not broadcasting fake news or foreign influence or just misinformation that's been fed to them by hostile foreign governments? And it turns out they're actually trying quite a bit harder than they have in the past. The Associated Press has a plan. Basically, what they're going to do is explain a lot more of the data they presented, how it was collected, where it was collected, and be a little bit more transparent about what they're seeing and what it does or does not mean. Apparently, Fox News has actually invested in some technology to improve both its graphics and its interpretation of data as it comes in. Obviously, these two signs are very encouraging. And I think CNN is going to just deploy a lot more witnesses, reporters on the ground, and people to collect information in real time and in real places. And that way, they're hopeful that they can counter information. This all sounds like a good start. It probably isn't the best solution to the problems that we're facing. But again, we can only hope that Americans will course correct and be less inclined to believe false news when they see it, even if it verifies their own belief systems. We just want to say thank you very much for listening. We hope that all of our listeners have done their civic duty and voted and supported individuals around them who want to vote and allowed those individuals to keep their votes private and assisted individuals in getting to polling places where needed. You can share this episode with a friend and discuss any of the topics that we've raised in this news roundup in a thoughtful way. Remember that it's important to hear other people's opinions and even their arguments. It will improve your skills as a lawyer. And remember, a key feature of our national security, despite everything that's going on, is our unity. We are a country more diverse in thought than any other. Our producer and writer and host is me, Elisa Poteet. Our editor and my co-producer is Francis Burkham, I understand now of Ohio. And my other producer is the ever amazing, works until midnight, gets up at six and starts all over again, juggles plates, can deal with raging personalities without ever turning her mouth down, Holly McMahon, along with all the members of the Standing Committee on Law and National Security, without whom this podcast would not be possible. We genuinely hope to see you at this conference. Don't miss this opportunity for learning and networking. It's very important. We hope to see you there.
The views expressed on National Security Law Today have not been approved by the House of Delegates or the Board of Governors of the American Bar Association, and this recording should not be construed as representing ABA policy.